Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus. Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Mix 107.9 and 92.7, 610 Sports Radio FNZ. Let's continue this great discussion that Sharon Thorsland has with Ricky Price and the good work he is doing with our youth here in the Charlotte area, right here on Carolina Focus.
Welcome back to Carolina Focus, everyone. I'm Sharon Thorsland. Thanks for joining us here this morning. We are speaking with Ricky Price. You probably know that name well if you are a college basketball fan. He starred at Duke University, two-time ACC regular season champion, and also played in the professional ranks for 9 years. He's the founder and president of Game Ready Skills and Development Training here in Charlotte, working with all sorts of youth athletes, getting them the extra leg up that they need to play, hopefully college basketball, but certainly in middle school and high school, and just improving their game all the way around. So, Ricky, we were talking a little bit before about improving these young athletes and doing what, working with them to get them ready to maybe take the jump. Obviously, not everybody is going to be able to go play college basketball, but you've had players that have moved on to that next level. The college game, I'm guessing, is a little bit different than it was when you were there. What do you see as the main difference between college basketball now and when you were at Duke in the mid-90s?
I think now, everybody's trying to get to the NBA. The focus is not even on development anymore. How quickly can I get to the NBA? And so with the one-and-done rule now, guys are focusing everything they have on the going to, Power Five schools, showing well, and getting drafted. As quickly as I can do that, as quickly as I can leave. And now, in the last 2 years, the NCAA has introduced the transfer portal, which I think is, nothing short of ridiculous. Where if you look today, there are 2,500 kids in the transfer portal just on the basketball side.
Jeez.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's unbelievable what's out there. And so now, instead of going somewhere, earning your stripes, earning playing time, if you don't get gratification immediately, you're out. And you're going to the next program, higher, lower, wherever you got the opportunity, so that you can get to the NBA or get to the professional ranks quickly as possible. And so, college basketball is become every bit of a business, not from the NCAA school side, but now from the player side.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see how this sport has developed. And some people, don't really like it, and some people love the fact that, people are – the kids are taking the bull by the horns, and now they're, being in control of their own, destiny. But, I probably lie somewhere in between. I mean, these are strange, strange times that we are entering. And so, for me, it's interesting to see all these kids make all these drastic moves on just about every front.
Yeah, the deadline to enter the NBA draft was just this past Sunday night. Duke had five guys, that are obviously all impact players for the Blue Devils. That's happening across the board. I mean, so many of the star players are leaving early, and they have been really starting in the mid 90s. I guess is when the players leaving early started. But then the one and dones, of course, now have been more recent. That's impacting, obviously, the college game in terms of who wins national championships. It's also impacting the pro game. Do you think that most of these guys are ready for the NBA when they leave after just one season at Duke or wherever it may be?
Absolutely not. There are a couple guys who are. I think your top five, your top six guys are probably ready. You can probably plug and play with those guys, and they'll give you something as rookies in the NBA. But a lot of these guys you're going to have to wait on. You're going to have to develop and then see what you get from them later. But the ideology of the player is, why I do that? I want to get paid.
Yeah.
And so instead of doing that in college and developing and getting playing time or not, depending on how you earn it, they want to get that in the NBA and get paid over 3, 4, 5 years. And so it's just changed dramatically. I love the fact that we are sending guys to the NBA every year, 4 and 5 guys. I think that's great. But at some point, Duke especially, and Kentucky, they're going to have to figure out if the one-and-done process works. And each program has only won one championship with one-and-dones. Duke in 2015 with Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones, and then Kentucky with Anthony Davis. And so, but since then, neither team has snuffed a championship, been to the Final Four, yes, but has not won a championship. And I think it's because these freshmen, even though they're great and they're talented, they don't know enough. They don't have the experience. They haven't been there and done that. And so now when you have a North Carolina or a Kansas who has older players, I think they have the advantage in an NCAA tournament one-and-done situation. And so now when you're talking about one-and-dones, yeah, we're going to send four or five guys to the NBA. Three of them will go first round. Maybe two will go late first round, early second round. Five will be professionals. But at the end of the day, we didn't finish the deal. And I think for our coaching staff and for the Duke program, it kind of stings not to have that happen. It stings for Kentucky not to have that happen, but not just us. North Carolina's had their fair share of one-and-dones. Yeah. Kansas has had their fair share of one-and-dones. Auburn is starting to get hit, you know, with those. Gonzaga is starting to get hit with mm-hmm. that. And so this is the way the culture is in college basketball. How we change that, I doubt that's going to happen. But this is where we are today.
As somebody who stayed all 4 years and competed for championships, what would you say to the college player of today why you think they should stay for all 4 years? I mean, assuming that eventually the pro career is still going to be waiting for them, what do you think is the advantage to staying in college?
There are some advantages. You know, one of the reasons why I stayed in school is because I really love Duke. I love the college atmosphere. I love the friends that I had, the friends that I made. I love my experiences. And Duke was a great place, not only to play basketball, but just to be in a college environment. But again, basketball is becoming a business. And the NBA even looks at you, they look down upon you if you stay in college longer this year.
You're
too old. You're 22, 21, but you're too old. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But they frown upon you if you stay 3 or 4, like, why you couldn't leave earlier?
Yeah.
You know, why did you have to stay 3 or 4 years? Well, I needed to develop. Mm-hmm. I needed to get and work on a few things in my game. And if you can't do that in 1 or 2 years, you know, the next crop is coming right behind you. They're going to look past you. But, you know, I would tell a kid in that position, you got to do what's best for you and do what's best for your family. If you're in a position to be a lottery pick and change the trajectory of the financial outcome for your family for years to come, how can you not pass up on that? But in the same breath, you know, you see a lot of kids who leave early and they don't sniff the first round, mm-hmm. and then they slip in the cracks, and now they become late or no draft pick, and then their career is pretty much over.
Yeah.
And so that mistake that you made just, you know, dampens your whole career. And so it has to be a good, smart decision. I say if you're a top 20 pick, you should leave. Okay. Anything after that, you got to really look closely at. But if you're a second-round pick, you shouldn't be thinking about leaving to go to the NBA early.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I've said it for years. I hate the one-and-dones and how it's impacting the college game and the NBA, but particularly the college game, because so many guys do end up like that. They fall through the cracks, and then they've got nothing. I do like the rule that the league changed a few years ago that you could put your foot in the draft, check things out, see where you end up, and then still withdraw it as long as you don't sign with an agent, which I know some of the Duke players have done. How much does going through that process, do you think, help a player make the proper decision? Because you know that they've got so many people in their ear, I'm sure, trying to influence their decision.
No question. Well, I don't know what they do at other programs, but at Duke they have like a board that helps you navigate through these waters to, you know, negotiate and interview agents, and then, you know, have communication with the NBA to get that feedback. And obviously Coach K has great ties in the NBA, so does our coaching staff, and so we can get all the feedback needed, you know, to kind of figure out where exactly you're going to be. Some of these kids take that information and use it properly, and some of these kids just ignore it and just continue, well, I want to be an NBA player this year, and so I'm going. Well, you got to look at the stuff. You got to look at all the information that is given to you and make a proper decision. Again, if you're a top 20 pick, to me, it's an easy answer. Yes, let's go. But if you're not a top 20 pick and you're 20 through 30, we got to really make a really sound, tough decision, and maybe leaning towards college for another year to improve your draft stock is the way to go. If you're not a first-round pick, this is not even a discussion. You should go back to college. You're not ready. Your draft stock's not there. And we saw that with a lot of the Carolina kids, where they weren't in the first round.
Right.
You know, Caleb Love, Armando Bacot, I don't understand why Caleb Love is not a first-round pick. But obviously the information is not there for him to be a first-round pick. And so he makes a business decision to come back, hone his game, work on a few things, and he'll have the opportunity to win a national championship, you know, next year with all they have coming back. And so it could work out. It could be the perfect storm for him. And that's a decision that I think is a good one. And then we go to a decision like a guy like Trevor Keels, right. You know, where I think, you know, it's a bad one. I think staying in Duke one more year to work on your body, to work on your three-point shooting percentage, to work on your overall game could help improve your draft stock. And next year you can be a top 15 pick. But now I think, Trevor Keels is on the hinge of being a first-round or second-round pick. And we're talking about millions and millions of dollars at stake based on this decision. You know, and so can he be a first-round pick? Yeah, but it's going to be awfully late. He stays one more year. I believe with his improvement, he can be a lottery pick. We could win at Duke. Everybody gets what they want.
Except for us Tar Heel fans. We are speaking with Ricky Price, former Duke standout and the founder and president of Game Ready Skills and Development Training, telling us all sorts of his insights into college basketball as well as the pro game. We're talking about the players who leave early and things like that. Also, the players that stay. The new name, image, and likeness stuff that the NCAA has going on. I saw that the kid from Kansas is coming back. You've got a couple of guys who are coming back, and they've got like millions of dollars lined up in NIL deals. Do you think that's going to now, moving forward, influence more guys to maybe stay and say, hey, I can work on my game, be in college, and still get paid?
Absolutely. You know, my biggest thing about that is, where was this at in the mid-90s? Why couldn't I have this in the mid-90s? You know, things would have been a lot different for me had we had this in the mid-90s.
Absolutely.
You know, I was a McDonald's All-American. I won the McDonald's All-American Slam Dunk Championship. I mean, I was a high flyer. I would have been one of those guys that you would look at like, yo, we want to market him. We want to get him. We want to promote him. And, you know, to see these guys capitalize on that now is crazy. And I think it's going to change the landscape of how college basketball and college football is going to be done, especially in recruiting. Mm-hmm. And so now they're recruiting battles. Like, and they're not based on universities. They're based on NIL.
Yeah.
So you can get this much money coming to this university. You can get this much money coming to this university. Well, you know, I'm going to go here because I can get more money. And so it's just crazy. But, you know, again, more time than I've ever seen in the history of the sport is college basketball and college athletics becoming more of a business for both sides. The NCAA has been making zillions of dollars off the athlete, and now you start to see the athlete start to capitalize off the NIL deals and everything else that's going on in college. And before it was a platform just to play on ESPN at Duke or whatever and get, you know, notoriety. Now you can get notoriety in terms of press and TV, and you can get that NIL money. And so it's really the perfect storm for the athlete where you can be a multimillionaire without leaving college.
That's just crazy. But I mean, I guess obviously good for the athlete. I just hope it doesn't negatively impact college sports too much. I mean, I'm sure it's going to have some impact on it, but hopefully not too much. And hopefully it doesn't impact what you're doing here in Charlotte with these young kids. Hopefully nobody's giving them NIL coming up through the ranks. So I want to circle right back around to what you're doing here now and with your camp. We'd mentioned it earlier. Your camp is coming up the week of June 20th, your 10th annual camp here in the Charlotte area. So tell us again, what kinds of things are they going to be doing? Like, what's the average day in the camp, and is it 5 days, and is it a full day camp? Tell a few more details about the camp.
Absolutely. So June 20th to the 24th, Monday through Friday, 9 to 4. And so we always start with our stations each and every morning. That's a staple of our camp. And then after that, we always get into the fun stuff, you know, prizes, giveaways, 5-on-5 games, 3-on-3 games. Usually we try to bring in a guest speaker or two. You know, I think that's very important because a lot of these kids have aspirations of being college basketball players. In the past, we've always brought in Duke guys. But I don't mind bringing in the Carolina guy, but we've always brought in Duke guys to speak to our camp,
sure.
Give them their experience about college basketball, you know, sign autographs, take pictures, have fun with the kids. And the kids absolutely love that. And we usually end the camp on Fridays with an end-of-camp cookout, which is more like a celebration of a great week of camp where parents and kids alike, coaches, were sitting outside, you know, burgers and hot dogs, chips, and just enjoying fellowshipping and, you know, reminiscing on how great the week was. And the kids have absolutely enjoyed it. We'll have probably 130 to 150 kids this summer, and we're going to get after it. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
All right, so you've got the camp coming up, and then year-round, of course, you've got the skills development and training as well as the speed and agility workouts. Tell us again the website and how they can get more information.
Absolutely. All things Game Ready, GameReadyCOT.com. Our training, our speed and agility training, our camps and clinics, everything is there. Please visit. Please sign up. If you have any questions, give us a call, 704-931-8596. Game Ready. Let's get your game ready.
Sounds like a plan. We have been speaking with Ricky Price. He is, of course, a former Duke standout, won two ACC regular season championships, also played in a very lengthy professional career, and is the founder and president of Game Ready Skills and Development Training here in Charlotte. I can vouch for it. It's an excellent program. My oldest son, Gunner, is a proud student of Ricky Price's, in spite of the fact that he is a Dukie and I'm a Tar Heel. I've overcome my bias against the Dukies here, so we've been having a lot of fun here today talking about all these things. So go to their website to get more information about training with Coach Price or signing up for their camp. We've got a lot more coming up here on Carolina Focus, everyone, so stay with us.
Great interview. Thank you, Sharon. Hey, with a few minutes left here on Carolina Focus, we thought we would replay Teresa Payton's interview with Beth and Bo earlier this week on the ownership transfer to Elon Musk with Twitter. Some great insights from our cybersecurity expert right here on Carolina Focus.
Teresa Payton, good morning, and why are you where you are?
Yes, I'm going to be speaking to people in sort of the wealth management and money management industry. We're going to be talking about how to protect the innovation that's going on with NFTs, blockchain, cryptocurrency, Web 3.0. It's going to be a fabulous day, and I'm just thrilled to be here with them.
Now, see, Beth, we've been talking for many, many years, and when the pandemic happened, Teresa started talking to me, I don't know, somewhere boring, like from her Charlotte office. Most of the time, Teresa is like all over the place, and now that you're back traveling to exotic places like this because of in-demand speaking engagements and such, you know, all is right with the world again.
Exactly.
Well, it's great to be with you, Bo and Beth. Good morning. And gosh, we've got a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I cannot get over this story because of how quickly it happened and the fact that Twitter did take Elon Musk's offer without a lot of negotiation. Basically said, all right, this is the best thing for the shareholders and the best thing, of course, for the board because they themselves are shareholders. What do you make of this? Was it shocking to how quickly this happened, and where is your head as this news, is breaking and is being discussed?
Well, this is unprecedented for the big tech and social media platforms. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this happen before. It's going to be very interesting. He was very bold and very public about what this means. And I'm looking right now at sort of his tweet about this, where he said he's going to enhance the product with new features, making the algorithms open source. In other words, opening them up and saying to everybody, this is exactly how our algorithms target you, want to get you back on the platform, send you different places, show you different things on Twitter. That's unprecedented. He says he's going to increase trust, defeat the spam bots. Spam bots mean revenue for platforms that are social media platforms. So that'll be interesting to see how it does that. And then he says authenticating all humans. None of the social media platforms have that digital bouncer at the door that says, are you really are who you say you are. So this is going to be very interesting to see what this means, not just for Twitter, but for all big tech and social media platforms.
You and I have done entire segments on bots, and I don't think most people realize how pervasive these bots and these fake people or people that are made to look like real people are out there. But I when he says something like that, and you made the point that spam bots mean money, is it because he has so much money on the front end that he can make claims like this and he can make changes possibly like this without it, you know, damaging his bottom line the way it would almost anybody else?
It's very possible. I mean, he definitely is a visionary. Now, you do notice, like, even with Tesla, he talks about, you know, making money is sort of a secondary concern of his. It's more about the technology. It's about disrupting sort of the current conventional wisdom on how things should work. So it could be that we will see that Twitter, it's going to go private. We could see that Twitter is in for a long ride, and profitability could take a second seat to innovation, transformation, and reimagining how social media should work.
That's so fascinating to me. I was thinking about this, and again, I don't understand technology in the ways that you do at all. But with all of the knowledge that he has and everything that he is trying to create, could this be a testing ground for something? I've been trying to figure out his end game with this, because I don't feel like just the person that he is and the innovator that he is, that it's just about free speech. Could it be like a testing ground for AI technology? Could it be a testing ground for, I don't know what, because I don't know what's coming down the pipe when it comes to technology.
Beth, you're on to something there, and I thought something very similar as well, which is, you know, he definitely dabbles in lots of different types of emerging and innovative technologies, and so it could be a testing ground for everything from artificial intelligence algorithms to what's really the right communication ops tempo for social media, as well as cryptocurrency. You know, he's been kind of an on-again, off-again investor in different types of cryptocurrency platforms. So there could be all different types of things that he's testing here. Could be things around user experience, emotions, doing polls. You just don't know with Elon what could be next, but it's definitely going to be interesting. It will not be dull.
Talking to Teresa Payton, our cybersecurity expert, the breaking news about Elon Musk acquiring Twitter, or on his way to now. It's a formality at this point. My biggest question, and I know a lot of people are wondering about this, will Elon Musk reinstate a lot of these high-profile Twitter users that have been banned? And you know the biggest one of all. But in a more general sense, outside of President Trump, just what about the people who left Twitter and went somewhere else? Maybe it was Trump's Truth Social, or maybe it was Parler at one time. But what about the people who left? Will they come back because of this? And then, you know, by the same token, are there people who now will jet? I saw people on Twitter yesterday, just in, you know, my own circles, at least a few of them, who said, I'm done because of this. I wonder what the long-term reaction at large will be of comings and goings because of this.
Yeah, that's very interesting. If I were advising Elon and he were asking my opinion, I would say that I would tackle some of Twitter's larger problems first before I sat down and said, here's who's allowed on the platform and here's who's not allowed on the platform. I think that gets kind of could sidetrack some of the things he's trying to accomplish here. And really, this gets back to governance. You know, we've talked a lot about this, Bo, where the social media platforms have to be transparent. They have to say, here are our code of conduct rules. Here's how we make decisions. When we ban somebody temporarily or permanently, these are the rules we follow, and nobody gets special treatment. Everybody gets the same treatment, and here's our third-party governance board. And it could be that Twitter leads the way on that. It's been a long time in coming, so it'll be interesting to see when he decides to tackle that. And then again, back to his spirit of transparency, if he's going to do it a very different way than it's been done before.
We've been talking for almost 10 years. This is easily one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest one we've talked about as it relates to the digital realm and cybersecurity as well. I mean, it has so many things that it affects this Twitter platform. Teresa, thank you for coming on short notice a day early. But, you know, when the news beckons, we have to adjust, right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. And it's always great to be with you, Bo and Beth. And just be safe out there and talk to you again soon.
Well, and good luck to you today. I'm sure you're going to inform a whole new population of people.
I'm looking forward to it.